Good morning, good morning, good morning. You are tuned in live to the world premiere of Beyond the Lab. And we are so excited today because we have a wonderful special guest author, Elizabeth M. Adams. How are you today?
Hi, thank you so much for having me. I am fantastic. I'm excited and I'm ready for this conversation.
All right. We absolutely love the energy. Before we get started, one of the reasons that we wanted to have Beyond the Lab is based on actually Twitter, which is where we met you on Twitter. One of the things that we noticed that when we send out tweets, more of the responses come from things people are passionate about, things that are authentic and heartfelt. And we were thinking, you know, people kind of put us in this box when you're in STEM or any science-related field as if you don't do anything else. And one of the things is if you don't have any other passions. And one of the things, I saw a tweet from you that announced your books. And I was thinking, wow,
yes.
You know, she goes beyond the lab and she's an author. And I think there was a picture of one of the books. And I said, okay, this is not a, you know, a book where, you know, you're going to class and it's, you know, things of that nature. This looks like a fun book. I want to know more about this young lady. So give us some insight into who you are and then we'll go into the book.
Absolutely. So as you mentioned, I am Elizabeth M. Adams. I am a native Minnesotan. I was born and raised in St. Paul, Minnesota, and, you know, spent most of my young adult life here. And then I moved to the D.C. area to kind of extend my leadership experience. I wanted to get into technology. And I spent about 21 years working in a number of professions for some Fortune 500, Fortune 100 companies, leading, you know, high visibility tech projects. And I love the work. I love technology, and I love emerging technology and all things that. And so I also did some work for the Department of Defense, Defense Intelligence Agency, where I got a chance to really understand the depth of technology. I led a systems integration lab with 200 professionals, and we got to do all kinds of amazing things. And but I've always loved the writing side of it. I am a creator. So I also sing. So there's all this, these other passions that help me figure out how to do the technology that I do, how to solve complex problems. And one way for me to figure that out is to either go write or to write a song or do something where I can express myself. And then it gives me an opportunity somehow, some way to figure out, you know, the tough solutions for a problem. So I hope I gave you a bit of understanding of just who I am. I love technology. I'm a creator. I'm back in Minnesota now working on some very, very serious, you know, technology considerations, transparent technology with the city of Minneapolis through my Stanford Fellowship and working on helping to pass ordinances that will help make sure that technology works for all the citizens in the city.
So you have a big job, and what you're going to do and what you're doing affects a lot of lives. And one of the things that people are not doing sometimes is following their passion and being comfortable in that passion. And you're comfortable in writing. You're comfortable, as you mentioned, in singing, as well as in the tech industry specifically also. But take us back to when you decided to write your book. What was the genesis for the book?
So I actually have three that I produced this year. So they're three e-books, and they're all children's books, and they are all books that have illustrations with kids of color, children of color, black and brown kids. And that was specific and intentional for me because I just didn't see enough of that from an ebook perspective. And because of COVID, mm-hmm. I wanted them to be free to families who might have to use their funds for something else so they can jump online, read the book, download it, and go with a read aloud. So I did it because this year, because of everything that was happening with COVID, lives were being lost. There were communities that were being further marginalized because of it. And I thought to myself, if something were to happen to me, all of my dreams would go with me. Like, you know, if I were to die, all my dreams would go. And I said, so I'm going to reach for the highest point of happiness that I can, and what does that look like? And I had these books, but I didn't have the illustrations. And so I sought out to go find an illustrator and said, I don't care if it seems like I'm just putting out a bunch of the product. For me, it was getting everything out of me and then putting it into the world and then letting it go to work for me, hoping that some young child or some parent might find a bit of joy with everything that we've dealt with this year from COVID and, you know, two pandemics, COVID and then racial injustices. So it was just my way of sharing what I'm passionate about with families who might be struggling and who might not see their kids in images in certain books, and to be able to give that away for free.
Now, Little Miss Minnesota and her six brothers,
yes.
Little A.I. and Petey, I have
yes.
seen the books, and I love, absolutely love the illustration. Growing up, I was an avid reader. I would sit in the corner, literally. I was raised in Michigan, so I would sit in the corner where the heat came out of the vent on the floor.
Okay.
This was
yes.
in Michigan. And some people may kind of connect with that in Michigan. And I would just sit there for hours and read books. And I honestly do not remember any books that reflected African American.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just
mm-hmm.
now thinking this while we're talking, and to see your book, and to see the fact that really they're giving people an opportunity to see what they can become, because the pictures with your brothers, they all have on like different things.
Yep.
And it takes you to, this is something I can become, and I don't have to see it from the lens of another race or ethnicity or what have you.
Mm-hmm.
I absolutely love what you've done with that. And you mentioned earlier that it was intentional. Why
mm-hmm.
was that important to you?
Well, for many of the reasons you just described, you know, growing up, these were not images that, you know, we saw. And when someone asked me what I wanted to be when I grew up, basically my default thing was a nurse. I didn't know I could be a project manager. I didn't know about chemistry and all those other types of things. Growing up, those weren't the things that were shared with me and my brothers. However, we had various interests. And so it was
mm-hmm.
intentional for me to show my brothers, one, to show a family that loves each other, a black family that shows love
yes.
and adoration for each other, which is the reason why in my pages, I say, way to go. I love you. I'm so excited to be your sister. You know what I mean? And I also wanted to make sure that people saw young black kids doing fun things like and learning words like studious. And
mm-hmm.
I forgot what some of the other words were, creative and inquisitive and priceless, you know, was the one word that my brothers gave to me. But the other piece that was behind it was that, you know, my mother passed when I was six, and so my brothers and I, we really formed a special bond because my father had to work three jobs in order to keep us all together. He did not want us separated.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had to help each other, you know, learn and help each other with our homework and so forth. And so I really just wanted that theme of love, family. I wanted to humanize our stories, like we're not just
yes.
all, you know, as you, some of the narratives, thugs and thieves and all of that. There are a lot of families that love reading, that love having mm-hmm. conversations, and love to love on each other, you know, and support each other. And that's what my family is about. And I know that there are others, and I wanted to extend that out to the world.
There is certainly light and love within your writing. And this is off subject, but it's good. I attended one of your events where you were speaking about your family.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
I was so moved. And now, you know, I saw the book before I saw your event. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So now when I look at the book and I put the pieces together of what you were doing as such a young child at such a young age, and the fact that you know the entire history of your family, I mean, that is amazing to me, you know. And I want people to
Thank
not
you.
Only, if they are able to go back and see that presentation that you did, but to read this book and really see how you can show that love and that light, you know, in book form. And
yes,
it takes authors, it takes creators to bring that word, in a sense, to life. And I think
mm-hmm.
that's what you've done with your books. And on your website, it says a message of hope. And
yes,
that's what I feel. Even just looking at the cover, you know, it's like, okay, this is going to be a good story. Do you see the light? And I'm creative as well. So do you see the light in the grass and how it embraces her and all of that? So
yes,
I'm just so excited about all that you're doing. Tell me,
thank you.
You know, there are some people who have fallen into the belief that this is all that I am. This is
mm-hmm.
all that I am going to be. I haven't been able to become an author or a singer,
mm-hmm.
or, you know, maybe they wanted to play basketball, or maybe they wanted
mm-hmm.
to be a chemist, or maybe, you know, what can you say to them in terms of who inspired you to push forward and do all of the things that you're doing? Is there a who?
Wow.
That inspired
there
you?
Is, I'm sorry, is there a who?
Yes.
Who
inspired you?
There are so many people, and honestly, it would be too many to name. And my inspiration comes from many different places. It could come from an article. It could come from a podcast.
Mm-hmm.
It could come from seeing a newscast and someone, you know, is doing something special. It could come from my own family. It could come from coworkers. My inspiration, I mean, I just feel like I'm just pulling from our entire planet. And whenever someone
mm-hmm.
is reaching for goodness in their own lives, I want to take a piece of that. And I do take a piece of that and figure out how to put it back out into the world. But I will tell you this, a few years ago, I lost everything. And all that I had worked for and all my leadership experience and all my degrees and certifications and everything that I had done, all the homes I had purchased, sold, all of that, when I ended up with nothing, that's what it made me realize, is that those things were things, and I had to now
mm-hmm.
reach deep inside and figure out who I truly am. Like, who am I? Who is Elizabeth M. Adams? And it took me about 3.5
mm-hmm.
years to go through that process of kind of breaking the mold of what I thought the world wanted from me, what I thought, you know, scholars or professors or bosses wanted from me, and to leap forward with who I am, and to never, ever be afraid to lead with authenticity again. And that
mm-hmm.
meant bringing my creative side. That meant bringing the side where I love to talk about hope and happiness and joy, but also the serious side where I have to make sure people understand that, you know, Black folks, we're humans. Like, we want the same things as other folks. And really
mm-hmm.
reaching into those tough conversations about racism, discrimination, profiling, exclusion, and understanding that I am all of that. But what was most yeah. important for me coming out of that was, how do I present myself in a way that leaves me healthy and whole at the end of it? And that was not a one-time process. So for anyone who wants to, you know, go do something, just make one step. Just do the first step in front of you. Make the next right move that you think is the next right move, and trust and believe. It will happen. I had no idea 2 years ago that I would be in this space talking with you, talking with Harvard yesterday, and, of course, you were a part of the Stanford workshop that I did. I was at Cornell. I mean, all these wonderful things I've been a part of are really because I'm owning my authenticity. And I think I mentioned at that Stanford workshop to follow your curiosity. I say that all the time, and I truly mean that. Just what are you curious about? Is it an article? Is it a person? Go research that person. So that would be my advice, is to never think that your one step isn't enough. It is. And never think that your one step isn't valuable or that you're not valuable. You matter. Your stories matter. Your perspective matters. All of it. Show up in this space. Show up in the world unapologetically you.
Wow. Wow. and I'm saying wow because I am so inspired right now because of your testimony, because of what you said that, you know, you went through losing everything and that's when you found out who you were. And I think in this society, we see things and we think it's overnight. I'm not even sure if overnight should ever be a word utilized for anybody because most successful people, it was not overnight. It was just at night. You know, it was during those times when nobody else was around that you were up at 2 and 3 o'clock in the morning checking social media, making sure this is right and making sure, you know, working on projects, working on a paper, the stuff that you don't see. You know, we go to Facebook and people are instantaneously, and I'm going to put quotes around this, happy. And they're doing all of these things, but people don't see the work. I'm not going to call it the struggle. They don't see
the work. Yes.
What we were talking about before these technical difficulties was being authentic and how you can be authentic in this world, in this society where everything is considered perfect. How can someone get to that point of authenticity?
Let me think about that from my perspective. Honestly, I just got tired of being something that I wasn't. I got tired of showing up in spaces where people were expecting me to present, live, speak, teach, whatever, advise the way that was comfortable for them. And to some degree, I allowed it, thinking, you know, I'm figuring this out myself. And then it just was, I just wasn't happy. I was miserable. And so what I had to do was I had to start taking every moment and claiming it back, taking my power back. So when someone would say, oh, we don't do it like that here, then I would say, okay, then you're probably not the right group for me, or this probably isn't the right situation. And a lot of times it meant that I was sitting trying to figure out what was. And so when the right opportunities did come, I could tell it by how I felt, by the energy that I was getting from it, that I was able to give off. It felt right. It felt good. And so it was really just trial and error, but I had to claim my power back. I had to just take all that back to within myself and then kind of decide moment by moment, is this a person? Is this a situation? Is this a project I want to engage in? Can I bring my whole self there or be authentic? And if not, then just kind of make some decisions. And we don't always get to be totally authentic in every situation, right? I mean, even in the work that I do, if I want my influence to be, you know, far and wide, I have to understand that, like I said before, other perspectives are valuable too, and other stories matter. And so, but being authentic is making sure that I'm not playing small so that someone else can play big. We can both bring our best selves and be great without me, you know, having to take a back seat to your position. So I hope that made sense, just moment by moment for me. And it's work.
Yes, it makes sense. It what comes to mind right now is authenticity requires releasing some fears. You said mm-hmm. that when you were in a situation, you know, you would say, okay, well, maybe this is not, you know, the correct partnership or the right partnership for me, for, you know, for yourself. And I think what happens is when you're authentic, you're going to have to release some fears. For example, walking away from a potential opportunity. You know,
absolutely.
Sometimes we stay because we're holding on. You know, I may not get this opportunity again, but it requires us to play small, or it requires us to play a role mm-hmm. that we're not comfortable with playing. So what you're saying, I'm hoping those that are listening are being helped by this, because you're not always fearless. We're not
no.
always fearless.
No,
we're
not.
It's a myth.
You know, it is a myth, but do it anyhow. Take that step anyhow. But like I said, I haven't always mm-hmm. been in a financial situation where I could be 100% authentic. But that's why I say moment by moment, because maybe mm-hmm. that particular 40-hour-a-week job didn't allow me to be 100% authentic. But how many moments in that week could I be? And start there, and then look for opportunities outside of that to expand my authenticity. And so instead of just looking at that job or that opportunity as the end goal, my end goal was authenticity. I even wrote out, you know, my own PowerPoint that talked about what was important to me and, you know, authenticity, creativity, you know, these just different things that are non-negotiable for me now, but it took me a minute. It took me a minute mm-hmm. to get there. So, yeah, to your point, there are a lot of times where I spoke up and I'm like, you know what, I'm not going to have this afterwards, or it's just going to, you know, rub some people the wrong way. And sometimes it did, but mm-hmm. it freed me. Every time
yes.
I took that step to be a little bit more of who I truly am, it freed me.
And those are the people we admire the most. We
yeah,
really do.
But it's work.
In life. It is a lot of work. It's a lot of work to walk away. It's a lot of work to speak up, because you don't know the full ramifications of what's going to happen. And when you're in certain fields, you could potentially be blackballed or, you know, mm-hmm. seen as difficult. From personal experience, I know that people have thought things about me based on, you know, race and all of these things.
Mm-hmm.
And at some point, you know, I had to walk away from the stereotypes and say, look, you can believe the stereotypes, whatever you want to believe, but what I'm telling you is a fact. What I'm saying is the truth.
Mm-hmm.
So don't take it as the stereotype. Just take it as the truth of what
mm-hmm.
I'm saying. Listen
mm-hmm.
to what I'm saying to you.
Mm-hmm.
So it
mm-hmm.
can be difficult to live an authentic life, but it can be so much more rewarding.
It's liberating.
Yes.
It's liberating. But like I said, it wasn't easy, because I didn't always
mm-hmm.
have models growing up that told me, go be authentic. Those weren't words that were used in my household. It was get your education, go get you a good job,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, you stay there and you do what you're supposed to do. And
yes.
And I was on that track, you know, went, got the education and all this other kind of stuff. And then, like I said, leading up to the point where I lost everything, I wasn't happy. I had a lot of good stuff going on. I just wasn't happy.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't spend enough time with myself to understand what would really make me happy. And I had to do that. And I had to sacrifice the brunches and, you know, the cookouts and the trips, because I wanted to just spend some solo time really understanding, you know, what matters most to me and
mm-hmm.
what I wanted my voice to be out in the world.
So how do you balance it all? You're an author, you're a singer, which is something new we learned. I'm so excited about that.
Yes.
And you are in artificial intelligence, ethics, and mm-hmm. all of these great things. How do you balance all of this with just life in general?
I don't know if it's so much of a balance as much of it is doing what feels right and letting it take care of itself. Does that make sense? So some people in the artificial intelligence world who are writing beautiful articles and they're speaking specifically about artificial intelligence, they balance things by, in my mind and from talking with people, by spending as much time as they need to doing that. I am a free spirit. I'm like a butterfly. So if maybe for a moment I'm doing this one thing over here and the folks in artificial intelligence might be like, you know what, I haven't heard from her on this subject in a while. It's okay because I'm doing me and this is what I need to continue to expand and grow. So it could be that I take a moment to read some articles or just listen to some music for a few weeks or even write. So my balance comes from me honoring what it is my life is calling of me, from me, and for me to do in that moment. I don't worry about the money. I don't worry about the next speaking engagement. I don't worry about the next trip. All of that seems to magically kind of unfold as I honor my truth.
Mm-hmm.
Hope that helps.
It does. Truth, authenticity, all of that. It are keys to really living a life that you want to live. And you balanced it all beautifully here.
Well,
and
I'm balancing it, yeah.
Yeah, you are. Well, you're an example of that. And I'm not saying, when I say that, I don't mean perfection.
Yeah,
and that's
one
of the things people in artificial intelligence in general, you know, I think, especially if you write code, you're trying to get to this perfection and life is not a state of perfection at all. We can forget it. We're going to say some things that maybe we shouldn't have said. We're going to, you know, we're going to be on a Zoom call and it might not be the best Zoom call. You know, so many things, you know, the sandwich might not come out right. The lasagna may be burned tomorrow. It's okay.
It is true. And there are also going to be moments where we are off-centered. And that's what it was like for me being in Minneapolis after George Floyd's murder. I could not sleep for a month. I was up and I was trying to figure out what I was doing, what I needed to do, why this was impacting me so much. I had to unpack, affecting me so much. I had to unpack all of that. And so it's not like I'm sitting around walking through life, this balanced, you know, flower twirling around the world. There are things that happen in society that impact us. And that impacted me because I've been doing the work of racial equity here as an appointee for the city of Minneapolis's Racial Equity Community Advisory Committee, had been doing this work for about a year and a half, and was encouraged by the progress we were making. And then it just felt like, you know, the city just exploded. And of course, and then the world became an audience to everything that, you know, black folks have been feeling for generations. And so that meant for me, I had to go back in, like I said, and kind of figure out what are the next stages for me. That almost took me out. I wasn't sleeping. And so that's when I said, nope, you've got to get back to your center. You can't worry about what everyone else is doing as a result of this, and what is it that you can do? I can still do this work, and it's still important to me, and I'm going to still show up, as I said, speaking my truth, but then I also have these other things that are a part of me, and I don't feel like I need to split myself in 9 different pieces to appease anyone. So
and I think
to your point, it takes time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the message I want people who are listening to walk away with, because of, you know, perfection issues and thinking everything has to be perfect, every step you take,
no.
every move you make, it has to be perfect. And if I'm not perfect, then, you know, the world is going to see that I'm not perfect. And we know you're not perfect because we're not perfect, you know. we're aware of that, but it's like a secret. I don't know. I don't know if I'm saying this correctly. It just feels like people are not aware that other people are aware that nobody is perfect.
And that's a good point. I did a presentation for a group of folks back in August, and I was encouraging people to take one step, just take one step. And one of the conversations we got into is the reason why some people don't release books, or they don't release their writing, or they don't release their songs or their projects, is because they're stuck in that perfection mode. And I like to, as I say, learn out loud or learn forward. So if I put something out, I can tell right away whether or not people are feeling it or not. But it doesn't change me. It's just a matter of me just putting my stuff out. I might tweak it a little bit, because it is helpful to be a part of a community who can offer, you know, some advice and so forth, but put it out there. My very first book, we didn't talk about, or not my very first book, the first book I released this year was called Circles, and it was about a little black girl who loves circles, circles like hugs, circles like ice cream cone or ice cream balls, circles like the sun, circles like marbles, and it's not like little AI and PD or Little Miss Minnesota and her six brothers, but it was my first attempt at putting something out. And I'm proud of that because there was nothing and then there was something. And now there's something, I should say. And so I can always say that there was nothing and now there's something. But I could have waited another year, right? I could have been like, oh, my God, I've got to get a publisher and I've got to get it set up on the right thing. And now I've got to go do market research and find out the pricing. And that's important if that's important to you. Does that make sense?
Yes.
But for me,
right.
I was not worried about the perfection piece of it as much as I was how can I use this to help young people and parents and give them a tool that they can use to, you know, see bright, smiley, you know, kids doing things, playing marbles and hugging their friends and, you know, talking about the beauty in the world.
Now, you have a new book that's soon to be released, I'm Beautiful.
Yes. Yeah.
Can you give us the title alone, okay? So I love it. So tell us more about your soon-to-be-released book, I'm Beautiful.
So I'm going to be honest. I didn't hear a lot of that growing up.
Okay.
I did not hear, you are a beautiful black girl. I didn't hear that.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to a predominantly white school. So I didn't get these messages that a lot of children I'm seeing, and I'm so proud that they're getting these messages and seeing a lot more. I didn't get that. And I wore glasses. So the little girl has glasses. And so I just really wanted to have that message repeated over and over and over. And so part of the images in the book is a fairy godmother comes to this little girl, and she realizes that the little girl has lost her confidence. And so she has her point to various pieces or places on her body and says, I'm beautiful, her nose. And she's like, okay, look. And so the little girl repeats, I'm beautiful, look at my nose. I'm beautiful, look at my eyes. I'm beautiful, look at my heart. And so I wanted that theme, I'm beautiful, I'm beautiful, I'm beautiful, to be played over and over again. So no matter what you look like, be proud of it. Whatever your ears look like, your nose, your eyes, your hair, be proud of it. Because at the end of the day, we all have a heart. And the heart is what's the most beautiful part of us.
Wow. That and words matter. Words
they
really do matter. Growing up, this is just how it was. Growing up, I didn't hear you're beautiful. I heard you're smart. And from the age of 7 or 8, they were like, you're going to college. You are going to college. So there was not a choice in the matter of going to college because it had already been instilled in me. You know, so the words you're beautiful matters. The words you're smart matters. What you put out into the world matters. And I think that your book, I'm Beautiful, is going to change lives because it not only gives the reader something to say to themselves, but the person, and when I say the reader, I mean if I'm the child reading the book, it gives me something to say to myself. But if my parent is reading the book to me, then they're telling me I'm beautiful. So now I have more than just me that's telling me I'm beautiful.
Yeah,
you know,
it's reinforced.
This exactly. Oh my God, I absolutely love it. Okay, so when can we expect I'm Beautiful?
Before the end of the year, I'm working on, so the way I work to do my books, which is so wonderful, is that I work with illustrators all over the world, and that was another intentional choice because many of the ones that I work with have never drawn Black people before, and I felt like this was a way to, again, humanize us, like they'd send things back, and I'm like, nope, I want the skin shade darker, or I want the hair to look like this. And so I have the images, and I'm working on the book. And so it's just a matter of me, you know, finding the inspiration, I'll say, to finish. Because remember, I told you I'm kind of like this butterfly. And so, you know, there are times I work on it. And then there are times where I'm like, okay, let me just let it sit for a minute and see if something else inspires me in the world to add to some of the language that I'm putting on the pages. Because when I write, it's coming from within, but it's coming from what I'm getting from the rest of the world, if that makes sense. And so my hope is by the end of the year, and it will be another free ebook, because this is my commitment during this time, racial pandemics, COVID pandemics, that I offer it to parents for free. And it'll have a read aloud again.
Okay. Awesome. Awesome. Well, I want to say to you that you have been an awesome guest, and I'm so excited that you are our first guest, and you hung
Thank
in there.
You
hung in there despite technical difficulties.
Yeah.
I am honored to have you. I appreciate your work. We have had an awesome show today. We want to thank Ms. Elizabeth M. Adams for being a part of the premiere of Beyond the Lab. Again, we're so excited to have her. She was so full of hope and inspiration and light. And we want to make sure that you guys go and follow her on all of her social media channels as well. To get her book, go to emabooks.com. They are ebooks. You can download them. You can read them on the screen. Little Miss Minnesota and Her Six Brothers, Little AI and Petey, as well as I'm Beautiful, which she announced will soon be released. I think it will be a great Christmas gift. I'm not sure if it'll be out there by then, but we want to thank her so much. We are so excited about what's going to happen beyond the lab with Black women in artificial intelligence. Again, this is our first show, and we're so excited about what's going to happen. If you're interested in being a guest on the show, email us at admin@blackwomeninai.com. But again, thank you so much to Ms. Elizabeth M. Adams for providing so much light today. She brought so much energy, and we're excited to see what she does next. And we want you guys, again, to follow her at Technology Liz on Twitter, and make sure that you go to the website emabooks.com to find out more information about the books Little Miss Minnesota and Her Six Brothers, Little AI and Petey, and again, the soon-to-be-released book I'm Beautiful. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. to Beyond the Laugh, right here on your 15 Minutes Radio Network. We will see you on the other side of the microphone. Have a good day.